Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to the new and improved Training Unleashed podcast. Don't worry, it's the same podcast you know and love, just with a fresh coat of paint. We're brought to you by the Learning Network, where traditional and digital learning is made possible. Now, get ready for another exciting episode with your host, Evan Hackel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to what I think is going to be a really great episode of Training Unleashed. Today, we're going to get some free legal advice. Who doesn't want that? You know, I think this is like somewhere around episode 190. Never had a lawyer on before, but in the prep, I can tell it's about time. Before we get going, on behalf of the Learning Network, I want to welcome the audience. Thank you. I want to thank our sponsors, C-Suite TV and C-Suite Radio. I have Peter Robot. Told you, that's the only reason.
Raybar.
So I'm going to pick it up from there. Today we have Peter Raybar with the Raybar Group. Peter, let's just start off and just hit it out of the park and talk about non-competes. And this is very fresh. There's been new regulation around non-competes. So why don't you first, if you could, give us just context of what the regulation says, and then we'll go from there.
Sure, and thanks for having me on the program, Evan. It's an honor to be the first lawyer on the show, and hopefully I'm not the last. I don't scare you off.
There could have been some secret lawyers.
Right, there are a lot of those, actually. A lot of them are my clients. So the non-compete issue, the FTC's recent ban on non-competes is a really hot topic that has set off alarm bells across corporate America. And the origin of the ban is an executive order that President Biden issued about 3 years ago, directing the FTC to do something about non-competes, either curtail them or eliminate them. Of course, the key question is, this is the FTC. Do they even have the authority to regulate non-competes, individual contracts between employers and employees? And so last year, out of the blue, the FTC announced a proposed rule to ban all non-competes. And that set off a furious scramble and amongst corporate types and a debate with individuals about whether this rule should be enacted. And there was 26,000 comments submitted to the FTC by individuals and businesses. Over 25,000 of them were in support of banning non-competes. And those were mostly from individuals. I read hundreds of them, really sad stories, many stories of abuse and unrestrained use of non-competes. And a year later, here we are with the final rule announced, banning all non-competes going forward, except in connection with the sale of the business. And also retroactively for all employees, except for those who make over $150,000 and have policymaking authority within a business, which is a very limited subset of individuals. And that's in all sectors that are covered by the FTC. So, there's 30 million non-competes in the United States, and this covers probably, 80, 90% of them. So it's a potential sea change with respect to the use of these agreements.
So I know there's going to be challenges because there always are.
There already is. So you got that right.
But I would assume people need to follow the law until there's something that happens. If people succeed in their challenges, in the end, you can't just because someone challenged it say, "Well, I'm going to continue with my non-competes." Is that correct?
That's right. So the rule, which was announced last week, towards the end of April, could be effective as early as August. And so until then, it's business as usual. The non-competes are in effect, and we'll see what happens with the court cases. So there's a chance that this rule never goes into effect. But if it does, it basically what it does is no one on the employee side has to do anything. But employers are obligated to provide notice to their employees to say, your non-compete is no longer effective. It will no longer be enforced. And they can't offer non-competes to new employees who should not be receiving them. And remember, the only new agreements with non-competes can be those in conjunction with the sale of a business or in an industry that's not regulated by the FTC. So I've had a lot of people reach out to me, employees reach out to me, workers reach out to me asking, you know, what do I do? Do I have an offer letter? Do I sign it? It has a non-compete in it. And I tell them, you know, for now, there's nothing to do. I mean, we negotiate it the same way we would negotiate it before. And by the way, the dirty little secret is, as much as businesses say non-competes are negotiable, they're definitely almost never are negotiable, no matter how much you're scheduled to make. So you know, I tell them, like, there's nothing to do. You're not going to not sign for this job because of this potential ban. Let's wait and see what happens. And if it goes into effect, it'll just be nullified.
So I'm assuming that non-disclosures, non-solicitation become more important. So what would your recommendation? Because we have a lot of people that listen that are in training, but a lot of people also are in HR,
right,
and operations. So, you know, what advice would you give to our listeners and our viewers? Because we are on C-Suite TV and YouTube TV, or YouTube. What advice would you give them for things that they could do that are legal that would give them some degree of protection?
So if you're a business owner and you haven't spent the past year looking at non-competes, if you use them, wake up. It's time. It's time to really get serious about it.
You mean non-disclosures?
Well, looking at the non-competes and then alternate ways to protect either your trade secrets or your confidential information or even your employees. So there's certain tools that would still be allowed even with this ban. So one of them, as you mentioned, is a non-disclosure agreement. And, you know, most employers that have non-competes will also have non-disclosures attached to them. Those can still be used, and those would protect your information, your reputation, employee data, et cetera. There are also confidentiality agreements and proprietary information agreements that cover that. Non-solicitation agreements, you know, again, those usually come in tandem with non-competes. So you can't solicit our employees, you can't solicit our clients. Those would still be permitted. And then finally, you know, for some employers, not all, it makes sense to look at, you know, termination notice provisions. And what I mean by that is, you know, most employees in the U.S. are employed at will, which means anyone can terminate at any time, either side, for any reason, and often with no notice. And this would put in a notice obligation. So let's say, you know, you could only, hey, employee, you could only terminate employment with 3 months' notice. We'll pay you during that time period, but you're still staying here for 3 months unless we decide to shorten it. And now that's something that's very common in other countries, and it's common in some industries in the US. It's very common in finance, hedge funds, some other, you know, industries. But I'm starting to see the increased usage of notice periods as a way to, you know, fight back against this non-compete ban that's potentially coming. And sort of, you know, you hear a lot about the scenario of, like, I don't want the person to just leave and go across the street the next day. Well, if they have 3 months notice, they can't do that. Now, you need to decide how much you still want them in your building, but at least they're not going across the street. So
that does add a lot of protection, because it means that person trying to lure them away can't get them immediately.
That's right.
And that might reduce their value.
Right. So, and it forces an employer to really think about, how much do I need to enforce this with a particular employee? Am I willing to pay them for a certain period of time to keep them? even though they probably won't be doing much work.
You know, I've been accused by some of my listeners for always finding a way to bring the subject back to training. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I wonder why. That's
I wonder why. Would it make sense for an employer to do some training, because I don't believe many do any training, on what a non-compete means and what a non-solicitation means and what a confidentiality means, so that the employees understand what they can and can't do? Because I think there's a lot of vagueness in that area. And also, companies sign non-competes, nothing to do with employment, not non-competes rather, sign confidentiality agreements with other companies and things. Would it make sense to do that kind of training?
Oh, absolutely. I've been saying that for, I mean, we didn't even rehearse this. I've been saying that for 20 years to my clients. You know, do not bury the non-compete in the agreement. Do not, you know, put it in the last paragraph and hope no one sees it. Do not gloss by it. You know, sit down with your candidates and explain what the obligations are so that they know this is a way to prevent, you know, future problems. This is a way to start a dialogue with your employees. It's a way to explain to them why it's important to you and why it's necessary. I mean, I can't tell you how many cases I've had, you know, where we try and enforce a non-compete, or a client comes to me and they don't even know they have one, you know, and yeah. I'll ask them and I'll say, I literally just had one last week, a very senior executive at a very well-known private equity firm. He came to me with a new job offer and a start date that was like a month away. And I said, don't you have a non-compete? And he said, oh, it's not that, it's nothing serious. And I said, no, but have you read it? Do you understand what it says? And it took him a while to find it. And sure enough, you know, now we're engaged with in a negotiation with his prior employer to get it reduced from 6 months to something less. But I've dealt with worse stories where employees come to me, they don't even know they have one. And I say, well, did you ever get a stock grant? Did you ever sign a confidentiality agreement? I mean, that's where these things can be buried sometimes. And I really do wish employers would just sit. And if you're in HR and recruiting, onboarding team, you know, like, there is nothing wrong with sitting with an employee and explaining it to them. They're not going to run away from the job. They may ask you some questions about it, but it may help you avoid some problems down the line.
So I'm going to take this discussion up a level, because what I really think they should do is create an e-learning course that explains what a non-disclosure agreement is, explains what solicitation is, explains what confidentiality is, have them take the e-learning course and complete the quiz at the end and document that they've been trained. Because anything done verbal, you know, is questionable whether or not you can prove what was actually said, because it was done verbally. Where if you use e-learning, you can document somebody actually took the training. You can actually document whether they completed the video or portion of it or whatever it was. So I would think that would be important. What are your thoughts?
I think that's a great idea. And I think if you're, by the way, I think it's a great idea for both sides. Okay. So let's say you're talking about the hiring day. Let's talk about the dispute day. Okay. When employers trying to break a non-compete or employers trying to enforce it. Now, if you're an employer, you would love to have evidence that you sat down with the employee and explained exactly what the obligations were, and they still chose to violate them, right? I mean, that would be powerful evidence. You cannot have the employee would say, oh, I didn't know, and you never told me, and blah, 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 and how can I read it? There was 40 pages in the agreement, blah, blah, blah. All those excuses I've heard. Now, at the same time, if you're an employee, you'd love to go through that just so you know, and don't inadvertently step in a pitfall, you know, and be one of those clients I've had and dealt with who have said, I didn't know, I had no idea. I had no idea the scope of it. I had no idea if it was still in effect after I left. So I think I think both parties could really benefit from that. I would love it. And I, you know, if you want to get that out there, I'd love to help you do it. That would be, I think it's important. And too often employers are just concerned that it's going to scare off employees. And I think that's not a real concern.
Yeah, I hear you. I want to shift and talk about subcontractors. And I'm not referring to companies. I'm talking about individuals who are subcontractors.
Right.
And I guess just tailing on to the last conversation, I assume you, if it's an individual person, you can't really have a non-compete with that subcontractor, or everyone would just convert their employees to subcontractors. Well, I know it's not that simple, but.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally, you would not have non-competes with independent contractors, and because that would be a sign of control. And,
right.
And when determining employee status, you know, courts and agencies, they look at different indicators of control. So that would be a major one. But regardless, companies put them in, you know, and take the risk. And so this FTC ban actually broadly defines workers. It's not limited to employees. So it includes contractors. So it explicitly says you cannot have non-competes with contractors. There's been some local and state laws that have said that as well. I mean, the whole concept of being a contractor is you can work wherever you want because you don't have an employer. You don't have someone paying your benefits. You don't have someone paying your payroll taxes. You don't have someone paying pension or, you know, retirement. So you should have the freedom to work wherever. Now, naturally, depending on the level and of the contractor and what they're working on, you know, there are some provisions where you know, employers can say, you're not going to work for someone else that's going to create a conflict. So that's one measure of protection. And also you can enter into confidentiality agreements with them to protect your information. And then you can have a non-solicit with a contractor. You know, they can't poach your employees or go after your customers and things like that. So it would be prudent to take measures with them, but a non-compete is not the way to go. I mean, that could put you in a whole bunch of trouble, frankly.
By the way, you know, one of the things I like doing is having non-solicitation with my customers, because right. I don't think they would like me soliciting their employees, and I don't want them soliciting my employees. But
yeah, that's not good for business.
No,
for sure. It's not a good
actually,
way to.
As a vendor, it typically right. only works one direction. They take mine because what am I going to tell them? Oh no, I right. no longer want your business. But the other way, they can choose. But looking to supercharge your training, let's talk about learning management systems. That's right, LMS. Don't have one? We should talk. Have an old one? We should talk. Have one not doing what you need? We should talk. At the Learning Network, we take LMS very seriously. In fact, we have four different options because not everyone's needs are the same. We have state-of-the-art features, and we can make your training experiences special, interesting, and exciting. So check us out at learning.net. Hey, by the way, we also have a lot of off-the-shelf content by ourselves or our partners, Open Sesame, amazing authoring tools, all kinds of reporting tools, everything you need to have your learning management system take your company to the next level of training. Come to learning.net today. I want to get back to contractors because there seems to be a movement to have more and more contractors in the country.
Right.
And I know that there are rules about training subcontractors or contractors and or contract, whatever we're calling them. And before I ask you the question, I'm going to tell a joke. And okay. I think this is maybe the second joke in 190 episodes I've told.
Wow. There's a lot of firsts and seconds going on in this episode today.
And it's not that funny a joke, but anyhow.
Okay.
The saying in training is, what if I train an employee and they leave? And the retort is, what if you don't train them and they stay?
Yeah.
Right? Because,
all right.
You know, it's really important you have trained people. They're much more effective. They're much more likely to stay. You know, their retention's better, customer service better, next promoters, all those things, all good things coming out of training. And, you know, be clear, this show promotes training. We think of it as a positive.
But so do I.
Part of the issue, part of the, yeah, that's right. Part of the issue is that if you have a contractor, you've got to be careful of how much training you do, what kind of training you can do, because at a certain point, they could be deemed an employee when they're not an employee. So I guess maybe share the laws about what you can and can't do with the contractor in terms of training.
Right. So, you know, going back to what I said previously, a lot of the analysis around whether an independent contractor is actually an employee revolves around degree of control that the employer has over them. And, you know, there are other factors that get looked at as well, like, you know, degree of risk that the contractor is taking and profit and loss potential and things like that. But control is a huge one. And traditionally, there's been a reluctance to train contractors on anything, because then that would be used against employers to say, you require them to go to this class, which means you had control over an hour of their week, you know, or something like that. And your rules. Now, laws have changed. And so, you know, I live in New York City, and we've become one of the most regulated, you know, workplace states in the country now, and cities in the country. And so laws have come out that said, you know, our harassment laws, for instance, apply to everyone. They apply to employees, they apply to contractors, they apply to clients and guests, et cetera. Whereas in the past, Title VII and other laws only apply to employees. So naturally, with the expansion of workplace related laws, along with them came, you know, requirements to train employees on these laws. So now there is a, you know, depending on your jurisdiction, there could be a requirement for you to train your contractor. So you would have to do it. So in New York, you know, you'd have to provide them with training on the harassment, sexual harassment laws, for instance. Yeah. But there are also other things you should be training contractors on, you know, like data security is absolutely something you should be training, you know, to the extent using contractors and they may be remote or they have access to your systems or your client data, or anything really, they should know the protections they should be taking and the precautions and the reporting, you know. So there are a number of topics where you could do it now, and it wouldn't be used against you as an employer. Now, you know, training sessions about, you know, a deeper like management style and other things, you know, maybe those are not appropriate, but certainly anything around a legal issue where it's required, you should definitely, you know, do it and record it.
So I'm going to dig in deep. Does it matter if you have training, let's just say, on communication skills, okay, or something of that nature, if you allowed the contractor to take the training but didn't require them to take the training, would that legally change things, or would you?
It would absolutely. If you wanted to make it, you know, voluntary, then that's a huge difference. You know, that's not controlling. That's just offering them access. But making it mandatory would be a totally different story.
So, let's go worst case. Maybe not worst case, but we hire a contractor.
You don't know all the worst cases I've been exposed to. So.
you hire a contractor, and the contractor has been very good. They're paying their taxes, right? They're paying, you know, all their federal taxes. They're paying they're not paying their unemployment tax, but they're paying their
income
Social Security and Medicare tax. They're paying all the taxes, and you've trained them and someone is deemed that person should be an employee. What is the risk that the employer really takes if they're now deemed an employee, provided that they've been actually paying their taxes and so you don't have any tax liability? Because I know that's one of the issues, is they have to pay their own taxes. And if they don't pay the taxes and you're deemed an employee that there could be risks to the employer to pay their back taxes because they didn't have it properly paid.
Right. Right. I mean, in that scenario, so I'll answer that and also give you the riskier scenario. I would say that that's the less risk scenario of the two I'm thinking of. Look, what you want to do is be able to distinguish what consultants do and contractors do versus what your regular employees do, and what the states and look at, and you know, the federal agencies, if they're involved, is, you know, are you really just replacing employees with contractors to avoid paying payroll taxes and all the, you know, FICA and everything like that? You know, is that what you're doing? You're doing an end around here. And so you want to be able to distinguish the job functions and what tasks they're performing. So it could be something that's finite in time. It could be something that's discrete. It could be something that has nothing to do with what your day-to-day employees do. There are ways to deal with that. Now, if you find that someone's really good and you want to convert them from contractor to employee, I would say, great. That's a good thing. Generally, the governments would like that if they were looking at the situation, but let's make sure they're doing something either in addition or different. That's not putting you at risk for looking, you know, backwards. And so I'm not as concerned about that scenario, because ultimately what the government agencies want is for everyone to be employees. So they're going to like that you move the person. The more dangerous scenario is when you take an employee and say, I don't have the budget to pay for you as an employee anymore. So I'm going to make you a consultant, but you're going to do the same exact thing. That's a huge red flag. Like, you're just putting yourself in a square position. Yeah. Target on your back, square position of liability.
Yeah. Interesting. I did something many, many years ago with the approval of an attorney, but the laws have changed.
Right.
And we had independent contractors that were basically floor covering installers. And we wanted to train them on customer service skills. So we created a whole training program. And then we created a promotion where, based on customer surveys — Net Promoter Score wasn't a thing back then — but we asked a question, would you buy from us again? And based on them taking the training and having a percentage of people that, you know, was low enough, meaning everyone would buy from them again. So I think it was like less than 1% of the people said, we wouldn't buy from you again.
Mm-hmm.
They got a bonus. So let's just say, for the sake of discussion, they could earn a 10% bonus based on their score. And what we did is charge them $25 to take the training. So they paid to take the training. And they weren't required to take the training, weren't required to pay us to take the training, but there was no way they could earn the bonus opportunity unless they took the training. Would something like that be legal today?
I think it would be pretty heavily scrutinized, you know, as a potential way that you're, you know, controlling their performance or assessing their performance. But it could also be viewed the other way as, you know, an opportunity to make more profit, you know, and the contractor assuming the risk there. Like, you know, if they don't have to do it, then they're making a decision about how much money they could potentially earn. You know, So that's something they decide. I mean, I used to do a lot of work in the newspaper industry, and these training programs that you describe and customer satisfaction, you know, measures were frequently used for newspaper carriers. And I could tell you that a lot of the state agencies really dislike them. so doesn't mean they're right.
Yeah, no. I know.
I mean, these were things that were constantly, you know, fought over.
Because the reason I was asking the question is because one possibility with contractors would be to have different certification levels,
right?
You know, and if you took this training and you got certified in this training, you could earn more money and thus they're choosing to earn more money.
Yeah. I think one interesting way to sell that, you know, would be to say, you could take this training, which would not only benefit you here, but potentially has value if you go seek work elsewhere. You know, yeah. So that this now makes you a X certified, you know, floor installer. That's valuable to you. You know, that's not just valuable if you work for us, that's valuable if you work elsewhere. So if there's a way to sell it that way and say, well, we took a risk too as the, you know, company. We provided them with this training for very low cost, and they could have just walked across the street and used it to someone else's benefit.
Yeah. We trained them and they left.
We trained them and they left. And look, I mean, that, you know, that's a very interesting way to circle back to your joke. but the reality is, if you're a company using an independent contractors, you have to remember the government agencies will do anything they can to consider these workers as employees. And you need to just constantly assess how close you're getting to that line, you know? Yeah. And so offering this program, how close does it get me? You know, what benefit does it get me? Is it a risk potentially I'm willing to take, or scrutiny I'm willing to undergo?
Sure.
Those are the questions, you know, companies should be asking all the time.
So bringing this back to training again, which is my habit, I think this has been a very interesting conversation, and there probably is a pretty significant need to train people about the change in the non-compete law, to train people involved in hiring in your company, which in many right. cases is a lot of people.
Yeah.
And if you use subcontractors to make sure that your management team is trained on what those rules are, because I think a lot of people don't really have an understanding of the rules.
I'll take it a step further, as you like to say. You know, okay. I'll take it one level up. If you're not training people who are involved in recruiting and hiring, and you're not training people who are involved in dealing with independent contractors at your company, then you're crazy. You're just absolutely playing with fire. Those are people who need to be trained, who need to know what the latest developments in the law are, what they can and they can't say to candidates they deal with or contractors they deal with. I mean, it's an incredibly complex area of law, both of them. And you can't just put employees out there without knowing what the rules are.
So, Peter, there's no doubt that our listeners have appreciated your knowledge. I bet some of them want to know how to reach you. And, you know, do you work outside of the state of New York? Who are the people that should try to reach you if they're interested?
Well, maybe they want to reach me. Maybe they want to avoid me. I don't know. I mean, hopefully they want to reach out. So I have a website, which is therahbargroup.com, RAHBARgroup.com. I'm also very active on LinkedIn, Peter Rahbar under my personal profile. You can also email me peter@therahbargroup.com. I am located in New York, and most of my work is in New York, but I do advise on issues, you know, across the country. A lot of them have connections back to New York. And I do represent, you know, a lot of executives, throughout the country, negotiating their employment agreements, non-compete agreements, you know, separation agreements. As I was mentioning to you earlier today, I mean, if this non-compete ban goes into place, like a big portion of my workload gets wiped out, which is totally fine with me. But, you know, it's kind of a funny
result. So when will the ban take place? I thought it did.
Well, it was announced as a final rule. Then it has to be published in the Federal Register, which I'm not sure has happened yet. But once it does happen, then it's 120 days from then. So it should be, I mean, if everything goes according to schedule, it should be in August at some point. But again, this has already been challenged. The Chamber of Commerce has filed a lawsuit. A couple of companies have filed a lawsuit in Texas. And they've asked the court to stop implementation of the rule while the lawsuit's playing out. And I think this is something that will go to the Supreme Court if it continues. Of course, if there's a a change in administration in November or next January, then this will probably be wiped off the books and it won't happen on the federal level. But I think it's still important because I think it's the popularity amongst workers really is something appealing to state legislators. And we've seen a lot of states taking steps to pare back non-competes over the past decade. And this will only intensify, you know, their interest in the issue.
Yeah, it can be a competitive advantage. I know back when I owned a training company, we didn't do non-competes. We just did non-solicitation and NDAs. And because we felt that's all that really mattered, and we were concerned that non-compete we'd lose a battle anyhow, because you know our customer base in the world of training, you know, we work with customers all over the world, so you can't really geographically say to somebody, well, you know, you're a training professional, and you can't train anywhere in the world with anybody else but us. That doesn't make sense. We just don't want them to, you know, train with our customers because they meet our customers and our customers hire them. That's really what we're concerned about.
Right.
Peter, why don't you share your website one more time? And then I'm going to take my training joke and convert it into a legal joke.
Okay. my website is therahbargroup.com. So, and Rahbar is R-A-H, B as in boy, A-R group.com.
Thank you. So, this new very bad lawyer joke is, oh, what if I hire a lawyer but never need them? And then the retort is, what if you don't and you do? So what if I hire a lawyer but then never need them? What if you don't hire a lawyer but you do? That's the joke. And I told you it was a bad joke, but
it's an important question. Most lawyer jokes are bad jokes, by the way. Yeah. So don't take it personally. But
I'm not joking about lawyers. I'm just what I'm saying is it's really important. And you know, I've been involved in a lot of businesses, some billion-dollar businesses, smaller businesses, and have had issues around employment. And it's not fun. And you know, you need, you know, an ounce of prevention is absolutely worth it. Peter, we always end the show with one tip. If you had one tip to share with the audience, what would that one tip be? We'd love to hear your tip.
Well, I would certainly say, you know, if you're going to sign an agreement, you better read it and you better understand what it says. That's really important. It's something a lawyer would tell you, never sign an agreement without understanding all the implications. And to what you were just saying, you know, you should, those are moments where you might want to hire a lawyer, spend a few bucks. And you know, a related tip on that is never skimp on lawyers. Never just go to the lowest priced option. Because if you're seeking out a lawyer, it's likely because something important is going on and you should be getting, you know, good advice. And to what you were saying, you know, part of why I have my own practice now after being a lawyer for a major media company for 12 years and at a major law firm for 7 years is because I felt like individuals face a tilted playing field in the workplace, and they don't have access to good information when making decisions about their careers. And work is really important. It's one of the most important parts of people's lives, right? I mean, it's where we spend the most time and where we have our friends and, you know, how we measure our own success as people. Why shouldn't you have access to good advice in helping you make decisions? Why should you, you know, you don't know everything. And sometimes it helps to just have a sounding board. And I got to tell you, friends and family, they're going to tell you what you want to hear in most cases. So you need to have someone objective, someone who knows what the rules are, who knows what the strategy is, and who has the experience to help guide you in these situations.
So I'm going to give a suggestion on hiring a lawyer. Okay. You hire a lawyer you can understand versus someone who talks in a way that you don't understand. And my experience in this podcast, Peter, is you take complex issues and you make it easy for people to understand.
Oh, I think
that's important because some lawyers, and they're not bad lawyers, but they're bad communicators. And to do what you did in this podcast and take complex issues and make them understandable is hugely appreciated. And so I would say if you're looking, Peter may be a good person to call.
Thank you.
But on behalf of the Learning Network, I want to thank you, Peter, for being on the show. I want to thank our listeners for being here. Without you, we don't have a show. I want to thank my sponsors, C-Suite TV and C-Suite Radio, and recommend everyone check us out on YouTube and just simply search Training Unleashed Network. Everyone have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Training Unleashed podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to like, share, and rate the podcast. This helps us get to more ears. Be sure to follow us on wherever you get your podcasts as we release new episodes every Wednesday. You can also watch the VOD of the podcast at the Training Unleashed Network. That's youtube.com/Training Unleashed Network. And we'll see you next Wednesday.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.